Well, to add to our announcements, one other thing to let you know about is September 27th, we are going to have a day. It's not really that different, but we're calling it Back to Church Sunday. Now, obviously you're here. So let me explain what this is, because honestly, a lot of this day is about the prep work. It's less about that day. We want that day to be like any other day, a day where you come and you're lifted up and you're with friends and family and you just feel the presence of God like I hope you've already felt today. But what we want this to be is a time for you to invite both those who you've never invited before to try church again. Maybe they've heard about it. Maybe they've kind of made you feel like they're not interested. This is your chance to try again. And secondly, to try those who maybe have been here before and no longer are. Not the ones who have gone and found another church and they're thriving and they're doing great, but those that came and kind of faded away. And I say this because I lost some good friends back after COVID. Y'all know how COVID went. It was not the greatest. We weren't the greatest of people sometimes. Fights happened. And I lost some friends because of decisions that were made. 3 years later, I ran into their senior son who was about to start their senior school. I was like, man, y'all have got to come back. We love you. What are you doing? We want to love on you. We want to have a senior Sunday for you. Like, what's it doing? And he was like, yeah, I've missed y'all too. I was like, you know, are you going somewhere? Well, we were for a little bit, but... And I said, you need to come back. And he's like, I would, but... Mom and Dad don't want to deal with all the questions. They don't want to deal with those people asking them, well, why were you gone? What, have you gotten over it? They didn't want to deal with that. And so it was then that I had the idea, and then I found out it's actually a national idea. We're celebrating it 1 week later, because I didn't know it was a national thing until then. But every year, there's actually National Back to Church Sunday. It's usually on the third Sunday of September, but we're going to do it on the fourth, just how things worked out. But here's the crazy thing. The whole purpose is we are going to invite all these people, and we're going to pretend like they were never gone, which is why the prep work is the most important thing. For us to remember, this Sunday, if you see somebody that you haven't seen in 5 years, you don't say, hey, what happened? You don't say, you finally got over it. You don't immediately start the fight that you had 10 years ago. Instead, you treat them like any other guest walking through that door. I love you. How's it going? How's the family? I'm so glad to see you. Because that's ultimately what we want this to be about. Not, this isn't for those people that were worried because they found another church. We're thankful for them because we're all the body of Christ. It's for those that we know that they're missing out on something by not being here. And we see that. Have you ever been alone? Like truly alone, like you, with your thoughts, with your minds, or even worse, like the song says, one is a lonely number, but two can be more lonelier than one, right? I mean, those are some lonely moments. I remember I just to be honest, with ADHD, I'm a be with who you're with person, so I don't get homesick very often. I always thought I was the blunt kid as a high school boy who, when I would go on all these trips, they'd be like, oh, did you miss your parents? And I'd just go, no. Because I was being honest, like I didn't think about them. That's not how my brain works. Except one time in my life did I truly get homesick. My senior year, I graduated and ended up spending 4 weeks in Ecuador as an internship through a program, not through a program, but through something our church did. And after 2 weeks of being there, first with my youth group, but now the youth group is gone, the second week with other youth groups, but not knowing them, as the third week got there, we got to the weekend, and the missionaries had to leave. And there's something about being in a place where you don't speak the language very well, at least, that I found myself for the first time feeling very alone. there was people I knew just across the way. I could have gone to the orphanage that we were working on and talked to some of the people there. I could, but the disconnect of the language, the disconnect of the culture, all of a sudden it hit me how alone I felt. And maybe you know those moments, right? You walk into a classroom on the first day and you scan the room to see who you know and realize you don't know anyone. You start the new job. You walk into a church. Those moments where, yes, there's people around, but you feel by yourself because you haven't made that connection yet. That's what we're talking about today. This is just a one-off message as we prepare. Today is about the idea that we weren't meant to be alone. God said this in Genesis. It says, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him.'" We have this moment where God says it's not good for man to be alone. And I don't think that just meant in a relationship with Adam and Eve. I think that meant across the board. It is not good for people to be alone. And so God builds a church. He builds a tribe. He says, be together. And I hope that you understand the importance of this. Like, this is the whole idea of we're pushing small groups, and that's kind of the point of this whole sermon today, is to push that idea of why we need small groups. Because there's so much that comes from letting people know you and being in a group of people that are there for you. Just to look at a few of the ones that the Bible speaks about, Ecclesiastes says, "Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble." Like, this is just simple math. If someone falls down and there's no one else around, what are we going to do? Like, I was talking to Nathan. Nathan went on vacation recently, and he was talking about how many frisbees he lost. And I was sitting here going, What do you mean you lost so many discs and disc golf? Like, why didn't you go get them? He's like, well, they went in this area of tall grass, and I was out there by myself. And he goes, if I got bit by a snake in the tall grass, who was going to know? And I was like, oh, that is a great point. Now, to be fair, Nathan, my wife ran over a snake with a lawnmower, and I was just upstairs, and I still never heard it. So, I mean, things happen. But the truth is, it's that idea. If someone gets hurt, if you're by yourself, it doesn't go very well. But if there's a second person there, they can get help. They can help you out. They can administer whatever first aid you might need. That simple math of we need each other because two is better than one when it comes to many things. But then we get into some of the other things. Romans says, just as our bodies have many parts and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. They start talking about this. It's not just the fact that two is better than one. It's the fact that you have something that I don't have. You think in a way and have experiences that make you offer something that I will never have. And the only way I can get that information, that I can learn that experience or be a part of something bigger, is by being with you. That each of you has a story, whether you realize it or not, to share. 1 Corinthians even goes as far as to say, if one part suffers, all parts suffer with it. And if one part is honored, all parts are glad. The truth is, I can't live the life that I'm supposed to live if you're not a part of it. And so the point is that we're supposed to come together to offer each other, because the truth is, the best things in life, the things that we create, the experiences that we have, only get better with more people. Because I can think of something and make it really great and have this idea, but the truth is, when I bring it around the table and say, what do y'all think? It's then that others say, hey, you forgot about this, or what about this? And all of a sudden, something that was already a good event becomes something so much more. because others saw something that I didn't. Then you have all the one another verses where we're called by Paul and others and Jesus himself to love one another in different ways. It says in Hebrews, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. And let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now the day of his return is drawing near. You have this moment where some have started actually not meeting together. And Paul has to step in and go, whoa, that, don't do that. Yes, Jesus has not returned yet, but that's not a time to say, oh, well, we'll wait around and we'll see. Instead, he doubles down and says, no, even more so now, the time to meet. A time to encourage one another, to spur one another on, to love and good actions. I don't know about you, but there are times that I don't want to do something good. Those moments where someone calls and says, hey, can you help me move in? Or, hey, can you help with this project? And I'm looking at my clock going, this was the one day I was supposed to sleep in. But all it takes is someone texting me, or my wife, or my children, to say, hey, are you going to go help? They don't even have to guilt me. They just simply say, are you going to do it? And that's just all I need to go, yes, I'm going to go do it. Of course I'm going to go do it. There's others of us that we need even more of a boost. We need someone to kind of kick us out the door and say, no, you're going to go help. You're going to go do something. My grandfather would come and pick me up once a month on Saturday to help at our food pantry growing up. And there were times I didn't want to. And my mom basically said, too bad you agreed and threw me out the door. We need those people in our lives to spur us on. The truth is, we were made for community. I have this video I'd love you to watch by John Mark Comer.
A growing body of research from the social sciences that groups relationships into different categories based on group size and the depth of vulnerability. One of the most widely accepted paradigms is from Dr. Robin Dunbar of Oxford. It's called Dunbar's number. He calls our inner circle our intimates. This is 1 to 5 people max who deeply know us as we are, our shadow and our light, and who ideally love us as we are. Of course, many in the West have no intimates, the fallout of Western individualism and the breakdown of the family. But hopefully, you have a few people you can bear your soul to, a spouse or best friend or mentor. The next circle is our friends, which goes up to 15 people. This is the people we do life with. We practice the one another's of the New Testament. We help each other move. We go on vacation together. We share meals. We drop off groceries when people are sick. This is our community. The next threshold is around the 150 person mark. Sociologists call this the law of 150, as 150 is about the maximum number of people we can be in relationship with. And it's the optimal group size for human organization. While there are some very large churches, this is also about the size of most local churches. And we draw on this wider social network for all sorts of things. This is our village, per se. The final circle is our tribe, the larger group we identify with and belong to. We don't know all these people personally, but this group is where we get a vision of life and a call to live with meaning and purpose. For many in the secular world, this could be a company or political party or a sports team. For us as followers of Jesus, this is the church of Jesus. And when it comes to our spiritual formation, we need relationships across all four circles. Jesus had relationships at every layer. He had 3 intimates, Peter, James, and John. He had the 12 and a few close friends like Mary and Martha. Then he had the group of 120 in Jerusalem. Then the larger church that he left behind. Healthy people have relationships in all four circles. But our deepest formation, growth, healing, and change all happens in the smaller circles. We all need what Celtic Christians called an anamkara, or a soul friend, to bear our most vulnerable burdens with. C.S. Lewis once said, "The essence of friendship can be summed up in the phrase, 'You too?'" Meaning, friends come together around a shared joy, like backpacking or surfing or reading fiction. In a spiritual friendship, the shared joy is Jesus. And we need a community to do life with. We were created to live deeply relational lives. And it's in the first two circles of our closest community that we experience deep, lasting transformation.
That's what we're talking about. This idea is that you need each of those communities, but the truth is, I think we all understand, a village is here. The larger group we see, but that's why small groups become so important. Because I can't know every single one of you here. I mean, I can know you in that village sense of the 150, and even that we start to push. And so the only way, this is why churches that start to get to this size, as they start to continue to grow, start to say, well, it just doesn't feel like family anymore. It just doesn't feel the same. That's because it's not. When we've hit that barrier, and the only way that you usually get through it is when you double down on that inner circle. But what I've realized is only about 30 to 40% at any given time take advantage of that. Like, you have this wonderful village here, that's great, but then you know no one actually deep enough to know what you do Monday through Friday. And yet, as Christians, we're called to be there for one another, to teach and admonish, to encourage and build up, bear with and forgive, confess and pray for. Paul, when he's telling these things, James, Peter, when they're writing these things, they're trying to explain to the people, this is the importance. Love one another. Spend time with one another. Hold each other up. Because as the video said, that's where true growth and transformation happens. It's always funny when someone says, I don't feel God anymore. I'm not feeling like I'm growing in my relationship with God. And I ask them what they're doing, and they say, coming to church on Sunday. And I'm like, are you spending time with other Christians outside of Sunday? Well, no. And I'm like, well, there's your problem. When you don't spend time of somebody, that idea of iron sharpens iron, of sharpening each other, discussing, talking, helping, serving, when you don't have that, you don't grow. Maybe you learn a little bit more knowledge, maybe you see a new thing, and you try it for a while, but it's only until we have a group of people that aren't afraid to say, hey, how are you doing? And get past the Christian F word, fine. I mean, that's true. How are you doing? Fine. I remember once I had somebody call me out and say, you need to do better than that. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm trying to do better. And I had someone ask me, and I said, fine. I'm like, oh, got to do better. And so the next person that came out, I was like, you know, actually, it was kind of a rough week. You know, car did this. Kids were doing this. And, you know, I don't know where I am. I'm not praying enough. And the person was like, I thought you were just going to say fine. You know, it was. It's that idea. But that's why we have small groups. A moment where we intentionally have time set aside to say, hey, how are you doing? I've really in love that this last week. I hate some of the things that have happened, but I have loved seeing different small groups this week rise to the occasion over the last couple and just say, hey, are we praying for so-and-so? Hey, what are we doing for this person? Hey, I know this person is having this problem going on. What are we doing about it? How can we reach out? What can we do? Because the truth is, those times are coming. Ultimately, we should have people in our lives that are pointing us to Jesus. This is one of my favorite stories when I think about this. some men carrying a paralyzed man on a sleeping mat. They tried to take him inside to Jesus, but they couldn't reach him because of the crowd. So they went up to the roof and took off some tiles. Then they lowered the sick man on his mat down into the crowd, right in front of Jesus. Seeing their faith, Jesus said to the man, "Young man, your sins are forgiven." Now it goes into this whole legal thing with the Pharisees. Jesus uses the time to make a point, but then he ultimately heals him. But I love this moment, and I've loved how, I know David Skidmore is one, but I've heard other preachers and ministers say this. Do you have someone in your life that's willing to rip up a roof just to get you to Jesus? Do you have four friends that we could look up and see them with heads sticking through the roof? I mean, can you just picture that wonderful moment? Jesus is having, we don't know if they can hear or how well they can hear, how big the hole was, but you just picture these four friends looking down, trying to see what's going on, what's happening as Jesus is talking, and it doesn't seem like he's healing him right away. And all of a sudden, after you're trying to figure out what happens, you see your friend stand. Or more importantly, you're the friend that was lowered down, and you're looking up at four, five grinning faces because it worked. That they knew it was possible. Do you have friends that will do that for you? That when you're the one who's paralyzed, when you're the one who's letting fear and doubt control you, when you're the one who's going off the path, do you have a group of people who will rally behind you and say, "No, let's get back to the most important thing, Jesus. And if I have to carry you on a mat or on my back, I will do it. Because I'm not going to let you walk away from this." That's what we're looking for. People who will rally behind us. People who will share each other's burdens. And in this way, obey the law of Christ. Like, I hope we understand what this is. And to illustrate this point, just to really knock it in, can I ask my volunteers who I asked earlier to come up on stage and help me out? The rest of you can sit right here for a minute. I'll come, you're with me. All right, I've asked Ruby to be our person. So she's going to put on this lovely backpack because, you know, school started, so it's fitting. And a lot of times we like to look at it like this, right? Like, yeah, I've got my backpack. We're ready to go. Life is good. And there are some times where it feels very carefree, especially as a kid, right? But we understand all too quickly life. And so will you bring me one of those bricks? Yep. And you can stand up over here. We've got a brick. This is just normal school. School, family, the everyday life, right? That gets added. And that's the normal weight that we're used to carrying. Maybe. That's already feels pressure, right? Not bad. You could keep that, right? That's normal. Like, all of us carry around some weight, the day in, day out, the things that have to get done. But then there's more pressure that gets added. Same when you bring that one. And this is just simply, I mean, emotions. How we doing? It's a little heavy. Emotions get brought in. You know, spiritual life, drama, which again, I think all of us, raise a hand, have dealt with on a regular basis. So again, fairly normal, but you're starting to feel it, aren't you? This is what I like to point out to people and to teenagers all the time. This is normal. That feeling. The day in, the day out, the emotions that we have. That's before we get into anything else. Okay, if the two of you will grab some rocks for me. All right. Come up here. Well, thank you so much. We'll come back to this one. Then we have those little things, right? Our sins. Our worries. those last-minute things that pop up that we weren't ready for. And it all starts getting a lot heavier, doesn't it? And then there's that one thing. That moment you dread. You lose your job. You get the phone call from the doctor. You find out your best friend has decided they're no longer friends with you. The car breaks down the same time, the house breaks down the same time. You and the wife can't seem to get it together, and you fight. The kids need something special, and you don't know if you have what it takes to give it to them, or simply your faith has come to a moment where you're having doubt. And all of a sudden, when already carrying so much, and let's be honest, there's even guilt that you're even carrying so much, right? When this comes along, see if we can even get it in there. How we doing? I'm holding it, so it's, we'll see if we can get it closed somewhat. Oh! Why don't y'all come along and help her? Come here. See if y'all can help hold it up. Sometimes we need even a few older people to come along and help us in our lives. Allie, you want to come up? Jacob, you want to come too? Now here's my thing. How's it feeling now? There's no weight. Is it still on your back though? Barely. So this is the whole point of a small group. You're carrying it day in and day out, but when you have some people that you can trust with how your life is going, not only does it handle the big thing, but it handles the day-to-day too. It makes it feel a little bit lighter, or in this case, that it's even off your shoulders. It has not gone. It is still there. And there will be times that she has to walk away and take it on her own. But the truth is, thank you so much. Thank y'all. The truth is that hopefully in that group, they even help you take some of those back out. That someone can come to you and say, you've got a lot of guilt built up on this sin, but like, I need you to understand, like, you're forgiven. I don't know how many people are stuck holding on to some things that it's when they got into a group and realized, wait, you can just let go of that? You don't have to be doing it that way. That all of a sudden they find grace and they find love and they find a community that has been there this whole time for them. But it wasn't until they sought out those people, whether it was a small group or some friends that they talked to in the lobby, and made that conscious effort to say, hey, can we get together and maybe just talk? That something more can happen. I want you to see this. Hebrews 10, coming back to this, it says, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. I love what the writer of Hebrews is saying here. They're saying, because remember, as the day is approaching, Jesus said, as the day is approaching, you're going to see these signs, these things, these hard things, earthquakes, war, rumors of war, all these things will go on. And he's like, those are just the beginning pains. As we see these hard things, both in our lives and the world around us, the Hebrew writer is saying, that's not the time to isolate yourself. That's the time to even more get involved, to be a part of the group. More so, even to the point of, and I loved how I heard one preacher say this, he goes, that means maybe not join one, but join 7 small groups. That you have people, not just one day, but daily meeting together to be in the church. I think that's why the church met together daily, it said, in each other's homes. It wasn't because, oh, I'm a good person and I love him so much and I'm going to talk about him all day long. I'm sure that was a part of it. But I think it was just the fact that they realized how much they needed each other because of how different it looks when all of a sudden, no, wait, you care for me. You want to know what's going on. We want to work together. That whole idea of they shared with anyone who was in need, I don't believe, we were talking about this last week, I don't believe that that means, oh, we're just this, you know, socialist community and you can have and you can have. No, it was the fact that anyone who brought their needs was taken care of. That as soon as someone said, hey, this is going on, they were able to reach out. So I tell you this, the more you suffer, the more that you have going on, even as these things feel like, is it just the end of days? Hear the writer say, even more then, let us meet together. Let us hold each other and be accountable to each other and love each other. I want to invite the praise team back up. And I just want to end with this thought. Wouldn't you rather go through life with support and people that are there for you than being in a group of people and feeling like a stranger? So I encourage you today, sign up for a small group. If none of them seem right to you, start another one. Devin and me would love it if we all of a sudden today started with three more. Like, that would be great. Because ultimately, we realize that that's the way we see growth. That's the way we see transformation. That's the way we see people loving the way Jesus loved.